Blog Talk Radio.
Found us at Masonic Effects on this 357th day of the year. We've just passed solstice, haven't we? It's been amazing, and I hope and extend wishes to you and to all of your family and friends at this Christian time of year, whether you happen to be of this persuasion or not. At least share in the effort of hospitality that we want to share. And the whole point of it is, and it was picked up by, you know, Christians being a hearty bunch and trying to keep themselves on the straight and narrow, made an effort to promote. They weren't shy about doing that, and probably wise at the time. This time of year, I'd like to extend a thanks. It's Christmas soon. I can give something to the listeners from the Philippines. I'm extremely pleased to welcome you. South Korea as well. Hello, and India. Merry Christmas to all. Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, and Russia has tremendously vital a nation that helps to remind the rest of the world about dedication, about loyalty, and above all that the nation has a soul. It's a nation that, if we take the time to study and learn, has so much to offer to us, for us, huh? And to France. Well, Merry Christmas. Huh? It goes without saying. United Kingdom as well. You've been so faithful and supportive, as have you, Wild Lot, in Brazil. What can I say? Not only are we impressed by so many things about Brazil, and we bear witness, as we all do, this as communicators, we bear witness to the struggles and the courage of the nation of Brazil, and we look forward to seeing all of these nations on the playing field in a couple of months in Russia. Mm-hmm. It's coming, eh? And the United States transitioning, a curiosity on the face of the earth right now. And where we're broadcasting from, Canada, very southern edge of it now. When I look at, you look at the map and see where we once lived up on Baffin Island, up in the Arctic, and the joyous occasion of living and learning from, living with and learning from the Inuit, talented, fun-loving people, face very great courage, and yet will crack a joke and laugh with this sense of almost innocence. It's wonderful. That's our audience. That's you. That's what's supported us going on this. I think we're heading. This is our 10th year anniversary, so we're going to have a program. Or in the background, you're going to hear probably a lot of smiling going on here. 10 years. Yeah, we get a meager about somewhere around 7,000 listeners a year. It breaks down, it breaks up, you know. And we're not capturing it all because we've heard that there's a lot of our listeners that are passing on the show to friends, which, you know, what do you say? This is the point. We're going to be changing, looking at the celebrating this year by looking at different formats and the different sponsors for the program. And I've had some ideas, interesting ideas sitting on the back burner of the stove here, that I want to employ this year. You know, we'll be doing that very cautiously. We're not going to erode the foundation that we've built. And to one and all, this is a wonderful blend of seasonal music and joy, and we're going to be talking about things Masonic, and I think bringing it home this year, the commentary this year, the diaspora, the order at home, your home, not my home. Remarkable group. So for all of our listeners, the audacious ones, why don't we just start off with a bit of very, very old world music from Britain and Europe. It'll be familiar. This is by Nikolai Scalelli, the lutist. Greensleeves, huh? Yeah, I think that's what you'd call us. Interesting commentary today. Let me share that with you. That's why. This is about my thoughts were out there to make connections. It's occurred to me that we live in a time where personality and celebrity is a familiar event. Once upon a time, not so very long ago, our communication patterns were much, much different. And to be celebrity would have meant probably being involved with the church or the military. or the monarchy. Other than that, it would have been quite localized compared to what we experience today. We have performers and people that have elected officials, and we have very smart women and men. We have events that economic and social that resonate around the globe. News travels at the speed of a finger pushing a button. And yet, for us to be thinking, you know, that it's, we're not making progress is like trying to look at the world with one eye closed or both eyes closed in some states. It's just not it's not reasonable. It's not looking at wide open. What do we see? We see us, a part of a human race, a species of memory. We know that we do take action and can make current some things from our memory. We're not sure, although some maybe comparatively ethnocentric groups would say that we are the superior species. We don't know, or we haven't been able to measure whether there's animals around us, creatures around us that are able to do the same thing. So the jury's out with that, but it's certainly not with us. We are a creature of memories. But do you notice something about this craving that we have? You and I are part of it. It's not that Masonry has lost anything over the decades by choice. It's that it's not a matter of that valence, positive or negative. It's that synergies that have been created. We are drawn as a species to the newest form of communication. Always have been. Whether it's the cave drawings on the wall that were discovered in France, it's a form of communication about an event past, yeah? And it leaves something about an indelible expression about the individual, whether it's that child's hand you've seen with paint sprayed over the top, leaving the delicate fingers, or the outline of the buffalo on the hunt. These are always forms that have come and gone. We're not prone to leaving marks on walls today, unless you're Banksy and you have, if you listen to that artist, what a depth of imagination and thought. So you can see even that form of communication moves forward with us, but we still have an appetite for the evolving forms of communication. We communicate with people that don't have speech and don't have sight. That once upon a time was considered a miracle. Now it's a matter of understanding. As we understand more about ourselves and the world around us, we seem to be able to apply it to forms of communication. So like this, not so very many years ago, when I was introduced to computers, let's see, that would be 1977, when I was at the University of Windsor, one of the appeals, absolutely of little interest to the world around us, was these things called, this stuff called computers. So you went in and learned Fortran, and you learned different computer languages. So computer technology has been with me a great long time. And the confusion came for me when somebody came with packaged software. Well, I was used to doing my own, you know. Not that it appealed to me as a career, but it's certainly in the background, part of the provenance of Graham here. So today we are connecting. And by doing that, we're able to, after a while, notice things about notice the detail and be able to use it. Now, don't be for a second thinking that that the spin that's put on this in the media is necessarily the be-all and end-all. It certainly isn't. What people that are sitting on the edge of their seats, anxious about new information, are business types and military types. Sometimes they tend to attempt to dominate the conversation, like a banker might, you know, or a legislator might. Truth is, the power, the authority, always rests with the people. Oh, we get despots these days that still, you know, you would wonder if Genghis Khan was alive today, would he shudder? He'd probably shake his head. But, you know, there was a sense of mercilessness about the history of his rule. And then history reveals so much about the advances that occurred in that pollination, that cross-pollination that occurred because of the way he saw the world. Peaceful? Not a problem. Put a challenge to that central authority. This is a fellow, ultimately, he would crush resistance, and in his wake, you'd leave peace. At a cost, yes. Peace that always seems to have a cost. While we always seem to have the ability to be peace-abiding creatures, we have great difficulty finding that connection. Today we're talking about diaspora, that order at home. See what you think of this. We might believe we actually have a single familiar home, but Freemasonry explodes that notion by putting our lives into a universal context. The moment we sign on, we become part of a legacy, a diaspora wandering into self-evidence with a considerable amount of uncertainty. To do this, part of the Mason has become impenetrable. On that we rely. Regardless of circumstance, if a person has the resilience and intelligence, silence becomes a disguise to allow us to disappear on demand. So often the taunts of conspiracists fuel mischievousness. As if the fertile culture of Britain, where follies and mad dogs found a welcome, then we could think about the gardens of Ptolemy, couldn't we? Masonry had everything it needed to regain and renew a sense of purposefulness at any moment. It is the willingness to see oneself as slightly different that makes a Mason complete his part of the bargain. Long before men and women noticed wanderers for whom adventure made them chafe in the confines of the rules. They were the embodiment of rule breakers, questioning orthodoxy, asking questions, probing. Publicity, drawing attention, was painfully isolating, so they stayed safely and innocuously underfoot. But what scandal this provoked when their associations, we found out. Relationships beyond convention violated the coercion of class stratification. We mixed. Mixing with our betters undermined social controls. Cats lying with dogs, sheep with wolves. Oh, man. Here's a little tune of seasonal tune from the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. See what you think. Thank you, Norway, by the way. And thank you, New Zealand. I forgot to, did I not mention that in the list? Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. It's a time to speak about things that bring us together. The harmony. The people that don't necessarily have the capacity to come to a common understanding until we are all able to sort out the uniqueness of our histories and allow for that. We're talking about something that happens in the periphery, in that, you know, the corner of your eye, where we can put away our tensions, find a common topic, and enjoy one another's company. Here, to do that, what could be more soulful, I suggest to you. I know there's others that will disagree loudly with me, but something from Alexander Pushkin, if you will allow. This is from one of his poems, "Should This Life Sometimes Deceive You?" And for a bunch like this lot listening to this show, I think the deception is often within our own imaginations, don't you? Listen to this. "Should this life sometime deceive you, don't be sad or mad at it. On a gloomy day, submit. Trust, fair day will come. Why grieve you? Heart lives in the future. So what if gloom pervade the present? All is fleeting, all will go. What is gone will then be pleasant. If by life you were deceived, don't be dismal, don't be wild. In the day of grief, be mild. Merry days will come, believe. Heart is living in tomorrow. Present is dejected here. In a moment passes sorrow. That which passes will be dear." Little connection with our friends and brethren in New Zealand. Welcoming midsummer. Yeah, the longest day. In celebrating Christmas as they celebrate summer. Here's a Christmas song familiar in New Zealand, and this one, the version is done by the Polka Dots. I think you'll like it. Fascinating.
Joy to everyone. It's an I said, oh, I
Charming. Charming. We're listeners, listeners all. We're going to talk a bit about the origins of Freemasonry. For people who are curious about the order and about our ethics and our principles, and are listening in to try and discover I hope Masonic Effects acts as a healthy mirror so they can look at it and realize that what we're talking about is our self, the deeper self, a deeper understanding, a contemplative sense of life around us. We're talking about from the standpoint of a group of people who have nurtured some very interesting and erudite notions. From the past, we have a sense of the. We've studied this material for so many years. We began to respect the timelessness and the universality of the ideas. It's like we nobody would claim the control over mathematics or biology or chemistry. No more would we assume control over thought. We begin, in effect, to explore with this sense of joy and freedom, with a goal of happiness, not in a sense corny or cheesy, but as a truthful happiness, as that rudder. How do we want to live? How do you want to live your life? In misery, in suffering? There is a lot of suffering in the world. There are times when people are clinging on by their fingertips. Too often today, there's hundreds of millions of people displaced by conflict. So to the people whose business is selling death, I have no interest in talking to you or meeting you, or certainly supporting you, and nor do I respect the goal of killing everything in order to preserve peace. Nah, you're killing everything to make a profit. But I'm talking about this other lot, this lot that is looking carefully and quietly, if we're good at what we do, looking at ways to connect with people, in a way that's convenient and comfortable for the community around us, too. So I'm going to share something about this that's going to be like, this is something that you could share with and think that it explains the work of artists, the work of inventors, of alchemists, the work of the theologians around us, and the work of the economists, the work the work of a parent to raise a child. There is a thread. You look for that, because the audience here at Masonic Effects is far more astute about their life observations than I ever could be. But I want to talk about this, something that I'm sharing with you. This is from a reprint, 1953. This is when this was published. And this is the original. This is a pocket history of Freemasonry by Fred Pick and Eugene Norman Knight. They're both members of the Quattro Coronati Lodge and the Manchester Association for Masonic Research. Thank you very much. All I want to talk about here and share with you is about the origins of the order. And I think they've put a great deal of energy and time into this. An immense amount of ingenuity, they start, has been expended on the exploration of possible origins of Freemasonry, a good deal of which is now fairly generally admitted to have been wasted. Yes, if you're thinking that we're masters of the universe, yes, we collect information, and sometimes hopefully it works out and we can develop it, but sometimes it is what it is. It doesn't prove useful. In a system fundamentally ethical, which makes a wide use of symbolism in its manner of imparting instruction, it would be surprising if there were not many points of contact with a variety of religions, old and new, in addition to the classical mysteries and even ancient Chinese philosophies, in which, for example, the square is known to have been employed as an illustration or emblem of morality. Many of the doctrines or tenets inculcated in Freemasonry belong to the vast traditions of humanity of all ages and all parts of the world. Nevertheless, not only has no convincing evidence yet been brought forward to prove the lineal descent of our craft from any ancient organization which is known to have or even suspected of having taught any similar system of morality, but also from what we know of the craft in the few centuries prior to the formation of the first Grand Lodge in 1717, it is excessively unlikely that there was any such parentage. Indeed, it can be very plausibly argued that a great deal of the symbolism which we find in the craft today is actually a comparatively modern feature, and that some was not introduced until after the beginning of the 18th century. Without attempting to give an exhaustive list of ancient bodies or organizations which have at various times been claimed as the ancestors of Freemasonry, it may be said, though, roughly, they fall into three groups. And so let's review them in terms of increasing plausibility, okay? The first come certain bodies such as the Druids and the Kildees, of whom we know nothing or next to nothing as to what rites and ceremonies they may have practiced, and who thus provide admirable opportunities for guesswork as to any possible or probable ancestorship. Of both of these, it need only be said that they certainly existed and functioned in the British Isles, but that our knowledge of neither justifies any attempt of establishing a relationship to Freemasonry. Again, the Rosicrucians, no less mysterious, have been claimed as amongst our ancestors, but whether there ever was such a body at all, or if so, whether it possesses any peculiar ritual or secrets, are extremely doubtful. And in any case, there can have scarcely been such a fraternity until the beginning of the 17th century. And by that date, Freemasonry was widely distributed over Scotland and probably over England. The Essenes and the ancient mysteries. Next come the esoteric moral systems of the past, such as that of the Essenes, that flourished in the early date of Hebrew history until well into our era. The ancient mysteries of Egypt and Greece and the Mithraic cult, these undoubtedly taught morality through symbolism and used elaborate rituals and inculcated such doctrines as that of the immortality of the soul. Here we do in some cases know rather more regarding their tenets and practices, but the differences are more pronounced than the resemblances, and the latter in such details as might well have developed quite independently in widely separated places or ages. Thirdly, Galicia, traveling architects, and the Comecine masters. There are several known or fancied bodies of operative builders or architects who have been suspected of having handed down and propagated moral teachings and symbolism, which finally came into the possession of the medieval operative masons, to blossom at last into the craft as we have it today. There are three main theories, as if such a term is permissible, And as the technique of operative masonry has undoubtedly been handed down from generation to generation for perhaps thousands of years, we cannot ignore entirely the possibility that some esoteric teaching has come to us through the same channels. The three main theories will be dealt with. The collegia were part religious, part social, and part craft clubs, which flourished and encouraged by the Roman authorities at the height of the empire. It is quite likely, but there is no evidence, that such bodies, primarily devoted to the craft of building, accompanied or followed the Roman armies to Britain in mid-first century. And that when the Romans withdrew from this country towards the end of the 4th century, some of the personnel remained behind so that their teaching survived and was handed down until it found utterance again among the stone builders of the Anglo-Saxon period. It is not possible that this may have been the case, but as there is no evidence that the Collegia possessed any esoteric teaching, as there was an almost complete break of several centuries in stone building after the departure of the Romans, and as there is no evidence even of craft organization among the Masons until the 10th century, and then only very slender evidence, the chances of an inheritance from the Collegia would appear highly remote. Again, there is a remark of Doug Dale, the 17th century antiquary and herald, recorded somewhat casually by John Aubrey, to the effect that about Henry III's time, the Pope gave a bull or diploma to a company of Italian architects to travel up and down all over Europe to build churches. From these are derived the fraternity of Freemasons. This, again, is not possible, but in spite of intensive research, search in papal archives and elsewhere, no evidence is yet available to support in support of the statement. We can safely, therefore, dismiss it as a guess, at the same time emphasizing that though much research has been carried out in recent years in operative documents, there is still no reason for supposing that any special body of Masons is ever employed exclusively on churches or abbey building in this country. On the contrary, a Mason took any job which came his way, whether church or castle. Lastly, much has been said and written of recent years of a supposed body of Masons who called themselves the Comencini Masters, so-called, it is said, because their original headquarters was situated on an island in Lake Como. Now, it is certainly true that the early development of Romanesque architecture was much influenced by Lombard builders, who were in wide demand over Western Europe and whose work and some of its characteristic features is distinctive. But it is extremely doubtful if they ever formed an organized body. While even if they did so, there is no reason whatever for supposing that they possessed any of the features, such as symbolic teaching or secret signs or words, which are among the peculiarities of Freemasons. Consequently, though the rather attractive idea that we had found here our lineal ancestors gained a considerable hold 30 or 40 years ago, it has long since been abandoned as a working hypothesis. And then the Steinmeisen. And this is a theory that our fraternity derived from the Steinmeisen, or stonecutters of Germany, and it became very popular about a century ago, following the publication in 1848 of the writings of Fallu, who, however, failed to submit any evidence in support of his claim. His lead was followed uncritically by later writers, including several of much greater eminence. The Abbot Wilhelm of Hirschau is said to have introduced by an institution of lay brothers by examination of the records, but shows that these were not connected with the building trades. Another claim, like that of the Comencinis, is that the Steinmeisen were established by papal bulls, but these have never been traced. And in other countries and lodges, we're set up in connection with the building of great cathedrals, and their rules and customs tend to follow a common pattern. It must be remembered that for several reasons, there was a constant interchange of staff that would be, and there would be a tendency for the best ideas evolved in one place to quickly to spread to others. The earliest known text of their rules was drawn up in Regensburg in 1459, and the Torgau Statutes of 1462 record the acceptance by masters from several places of the ordinances previously drawn up. These regulations were confirmed by imperial authority in 1498 and again in 1563. So the translations can be found in Gould's History of Freemasonry, but we may here mention briefly that though some of their provisions are found in the old charges of England, the latter do not in the main follow those documents. The apprentice, when declared free, was required to enter into an obligation, among other things, not unlawfully, to communicate the mason's greeting and grip, and not to alter without permission the mark conferred on him. The Torgau ordinances contain several instructions on the conferment and the use of the mark, and even on its loan to an apprentice when his master has no work for him. The nature of the greeting is unknown today, but was probably a formula rather than a word, such as was given in Scotland. Context. Always the context. This is an old Russian song from done by a spiritual seminary choir from Siberia. And it's accompanied by Orthodox festal icons. You know, we're using light and we refer to light. Don't know a whole great deal about it. Except that it's the source of life. Photons, little particles of light, slowly work their way to the surface of the sun to be seen as sunlight. 10 million degrees, hot enough to fuse hydrogen, but too cold to fuse helium. Helium is the ash of the sun's nuclear furnace, the sun. The sun, when we see the edges, it's moving. It's not a solid, and it's not a solid because of the heat that breaks down the connections of the molecules in a way that doesn't happen anywhere else. And it gives off these photons. It takes another 10 million years for the photon to come from the center of the reactor, the sun, to the surface, because it's bumping off so many atoms. There are hotter stars, more massive, and like this supernova, they transform iron into all the heavier elements. The light of a supernova is like all the light in the galaxy. All the light equals about 1% of the energy liberated by the explosion. So you think about it. We see a supernova, and we see all this bright light, but it's only about 1% of the energy. So where's the rest? The rest of the energy is carried off by one of the most common and most mysterious particles of all. Trillions are passing through you and me right now. It's called a neutrino. Neutrinos can pass through 100 light years of steel without slowing down. Matter is no obstacle. A minuscule electron has more than a million times its mass. Neutrinos move faster than light. The question is always how. Wolfgang Pauli was a theoretical physicist, and in the 1930s he wondered where the missing energy went, and he imagined the neutrinos. Science are tracking them back to the beginning of time, the wall of forever. Photons from the core of the sun take 10 million years to reach the surface, but that's a relatively short period of time. The universe that you and I live in is about 13.8 billion years old. Forty-five thousand million years ago, the sun began fusing hydrogen. And 10 million years ago, the Milky Way formed the galaxy. We talk about searching for the light. We cannot see creation in its darkness. The further we see, the older the light. We're tracing back to the neutrinos from creation. The neutrinos from creation are within you. Just absolutely amazing. Hang on for a little Scottish Gaelic. Dwayne Norling. Thank you.
the field of ours. Oh, come next to me, come be sinners, and now we feel thy border like a field of ours. We should know the key for the composter, we should know the key for the composter, we should know the key for the composter, tell it off of the bar.
You think you've heard it all. Well, Christmas music in Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic. And yeah, for a time, there was Gaelic spoken on the island where I was born, Prince Edward Island. And we're not sure if it's died out completely. Life goes on. Every ending allows for a new beginning. Experience things in odd ways, selectively. But we are, as a Mason, always trying to catch up, the generosity of the men and women who associate themselves with a Masonic order is truly, I think, a testament to humanity, to an expression of the what I believe is the true spirit of mankind. I know that there are some out there who suspect that we are untrustworthy and violent at our core, and I tend to think that we, where we see periods of conflict, the people involved in that have been damaged. I think there is an innocence that is hopeful. It's not that we can go back in time. We can't. But we have that sense of a better day when we, that warmth that we feel when we're with our comrades, our mates, our friends. So with this season upon us, if you're not part of it directly in celebrating it, if you're not part of it spiritually, that's all right. If you're a one day a year a Christian, that's still all right. Nobody will judge you. You take care of that yourself. But it's your faith. Your faith in this very complicated universe that we live in. How did it all come together? We're able to understand the mathematics. We're able to try and figure out this ball of heat that's up there in the sky. And we've gone through different versions of it before. I kind of like the flat Earth society, and you know that the sun is just rotating around us. I kind of like that. Of course, it's fantasy. Masons are able to carry competing ideas in their mind at the same time. They can begin to explore the alternative, the adversary, the protagonist, understand the world through the protagonist's eyes, while not necessarily allowing that they agree. With that ability comes a healthy dose of skepticism. I don't think all Masons are skeptics. I think they're good Masons are that group that rise above the tedium of the lout and the uneducated and disinterested. And the world is like this gold mine around us. It's just this fascinating environment. I hope that your studies over the next week help you to find some deeper understanding and satisfaction. We're going to check out of here with a bit of material from this country, singers from this country, that mean a lot to me. This is part of my gift to you, is what I consider some of the most remarkable music. This is a woman that's living over on the West Coast. She was, her name's Sarah McLachlan. She came through a lot. She wasn't popular, and she was taunted when she was younger. And maybe that's what shaped her. Here's a song that is a cover of a Canadian writer from Saskatchewan, Joni Mitchell. A remarkably independent and very talented writer and the singer. A three-octave range is Joni Mitchell's legacy. This is a song called River. You may have heard it before, may not. This, and then I'll follow it up with something from our defining kind of province, Quebec, Céline Dion. Anyway, I wish you and yours a very, very Merry Christmas. Thank you for tuning in. Wherever you are, be safe. And commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, will you? I'll talk to you again in a week. Bye for now.
Reindeer singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had.
And that's part of the reason I like being here in Canada. Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas. See you soon. Oof. Maybe we'll just play that again.